What's the number of the verse?
Nine.
Because we had a special class yesterday, I was asked to read a few verses to catch up. We're reading today. This is the questions by King Parikshit.
You're going to cover yesterday's slokas also.
Yeah, so that's what, which number?
Nine,
start with nine. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'll just read a few verses. Ajakshujati Bhutani
Ajakshujati Bhutani
Bhutatmayat Anugrahat
Bhutatmayat Anugrahat
Dabdrusheyena Tadrupam
Dabdrusheyena Tadrupam
Nabhi Padma Samudbhava
Nabhi Padma Samudbhava.
Brahma, who was not born of a material source but of the lotus flower coming out of the navel abdomen of the Lord, is the creator of all those who are materially born. Of course, by the grace of the Lord, Brahma was able to see the form of the Lord. Purport. The first living creature, Brahma, is called Ajat because he did not take his birth from the womb of a mother materially born. He was directly born from the bodily expansion of the lotus flower of the Lord. Thus, it is not readily understandable whether the body of the Lord and that of Brahma are of the same quality or different. This must also be clearly understood. One thing is, however, certain. Brahma was completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord, because after his birth he could create living beings by the Lord's grace only, and he could see the form of the Lord. Whether the form seen by Brahma is of the same quality as that of Brahma is a bewildering question, and Maharaj Parikshit wanted to get clear answers from Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Text 10. Sachapi yatra purusho Vishvastitu bhava bhayaha
Vishvastitu bhava bhayaha
Mukpatma maya mayesha
Mukpatma maya mayesha
Shiktir sarva guhashayaha Please also explain the personality of Godhead who lies in every heart as the Supersoul, as the Lord of all energies, but is untouched by his external energy. Purport. Undoubtedly, the form of the Lord who is seen by Brahma must be transcendental. Otherwise, how could he simply look upon the creative energy without being touched? It is understood also that the same Purusha lies in the heart of every living entity. This also requires proper explanation. Purushasvaya Vailokaha
Purushasvaya Vailokaha
Sapalat Purva Kalpita
Sapalat Purva Kalpita
Loka Amushaya Vyanaha
Loka Amushaya Vyanaha
Sapala Iti Shushuma
Sapala Iti Shushuma.
O learned Brahmana, it was formally explained that all the planets of the universe with their respective governors are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Virat Purusha. I have also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virat Purusha, but what is their actual position? Will you please explain that? Okay. text 12. Yavan kalpo vikalpo va.
Yavan kalpo vikalpo va.
Yata kalo namiyate. Bhukta bhavya bhavachchadha.
Bhukta bhavya bhavachchadha.
Ayurmanam chayatsataha. Also, please explain the duration of time between creation and annihilation, and that of other subsidiary creations, as well as the nature of time, indicated by the sound of past, present, and future. Also, please explain the duration and measurement of life of the different living beings known as the demigods, the human beings, etc., in different planets of the universe. Purport. Past, present, and future are different features of time to indicate the duration of life for the universe and all its paraphernalia, including the different living beings in different planets. Kalasya nugatirya tu.
Kalasya nugatirya tu.
Lakshate ni prihatyapi.
Lakshate ni prihatyapi.
Yavatya karmagatayo.
Yavatya karmagatayo.
Yadrishir dvijasatama. O purest of the Brahmanas, please explain the cause of the different durations of time, both short and long, as well as the beginning of time following the course of action. Text 14. We can repeat this one. Yasmin karma samabhayo.
Yasmin karma samabhayo.
Yatayeno pagrihate.
Yatayeno pagrihate.
Yunanam minam chaiva. Harinamam apipshatam. Please chant.
Yasmin karma samabhayo.
Yasmin karma samabhayo.
Yatayeno pagrihate.
Yatayeno pagrihate.
Gunanam gunam chaiva.
Gunanam gunam chaiva.
Harinamam apipshatam.
Yasmin,
in which
karma,
actions,
samavyaha,
accumulation,
yata,
as far as
yena,
by which
upagriyate,
takes over,
gunanam,
of the different modes of material nature,
guninam,
of the living beings,
cha.
Also,
Eva,
certainly,
Parinamam,
resultant,
Apisatam,
of the desires.
Translation.
Then again,
kindly describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. Purport. The actions and reactions of all works in the material modes of nature, either in the minute form or in the gigantic form, are accumulated, and thus the result of such accumulated action and reactions of karma, or work, become manifested in the same proportion. How such actions or reactions take place, what the different procedures are, and what proportion they act are all subject matters of Maharaj Pariksit's inquiries from the great Brahma Sukadeva Goswami. Life in the higher planets, known as the abodes of the denizens of heaven, is obtained not by the strength of spacecraft, as is now being contemplated by the inexperienced scientists, but by works done in the mode of goodness. Even on the very planet where we are now living, there are restrictions upon the entrance of foreigners into a country where the citizens are more prosperous. For example, the American government has many restrictions for the entrance of foreigners from less prosperous countries. The reason is that the Americans do not wish to share their prosperity with any foreigner who has not qualified himself as a citizen of America. Similarly, the same mentality is prevailing in other planets where there are more intelligent living beings residing. The higher planetary living conditions are all in the mode of goodness, and anyone desiring to enter the higher planets like the Moon, Sun, and Venus must qualify thoroughly by activity and complete goodness. Maharaj Pariksit's inquiries are on the basis of proportionate actions of goodness, which qualify one in this planet to be promoted to the highest regions of the universe. Even on this planet of our present residence, one cannot achieve a good position within the social order without being qualified and with proportionate good work. One cannot forcibly sit on the chair of a high court judge without being qualified for the post. Similarly, one cannot enter into the higher planetary systems without being qualified by good works in this life. Persons addicted to the habits of passion and ignorance have no chance of entering the higher planetary systems simply by an electronic mechanism. According to the statement of Bhagavad Gita 9.25, persons trying to qualify themselves for promotion to the higher heavenly planets can go there. Similarly, persons trying for the Pitrilokas can go there. Similarly, persons trying to improve the conditions on this earth can also do that. And persons who are engaged in going back home, back to Godhead, can achieve that result. The various actions or reactions of work in the mode of goodness are generally known as pious work with devotional service, culture of knowledge, with devotional service, mystic powers, with devotional service, and at last, devotional service unmixed with any other varieties of goodness. This unmixed devotional service is transcendental and is called para bhakti. It alone can promote a person to the transcendental kingdom of God. Such a transcendental kingdom is not a myth, but is as factual as the moon. One must have transcendental qualities to understand the kingdom of God and God himself. Quite a few questions. And these questions are really very elevated, especially when you think of who's asking them, a king. I mean, they're out of this world, literally, out of this world, these questions. And you can imagine some of our leaders, even good health and not ready to die, asking such a question as this about time and karma and things like that. It's, you know, it's obvious that the age of Kali is setting in. I think it was Trivikram Prabhu the other day was showing how that in the scriptures it says that the bodies will get smaller and smaller as we progress in Kali Yuga. But the brain proportionately gets smaller and smaller to a little pea size, and where we can't even understand these questions, what less, you know, generate them and ask them from our so-called intelligence. So this is pretty amazing that we are fortunate that Maharaj Pariksit is asking these questions so that we can learn such of this difference between matter and spirit and who that supreme person is. So you can just see the difference in qualities in this age, that not only is it the brain like a pea, but it's also packed in with, Prabhupada says, it's packed with cow dung, such that we can't even, you know, comprehend the simplest thing. But still there are some, you know, rocket scientists and things like that that want to look into the mysteries of the universe and would like to travel there and unveil different intricacies of the of time and action. But very few. Most people are pretty stuck thinking that this life is all in all, and that I'm here to enjoy. And if I get caught doing some bad things, well, that's too bad. But it's all over with at the time of death, and that's it, finished. But then people now are a little bit more interested in karma. We've seen a little gain in popularity for the words karma and reincarnation and dharma. But along with that is some misconceptions and definitely a lack of a full understanding that we receive here, even in this one purport. So at least this is something that we can see is beneficial, although they don't really understand it. At least they're a little bit thoughtful that when they do things that there might be some reaction. Actually, there's a poll that's been gone around the United States, and most of the people believe in karma, which is a good thing. Maybe they'll clean up their act some. But many of them think that, like my mother, she thought that there was only good karma. You only go up, you don't go down. You only get benefit. And then there's we went to a festival one time and doing some prasadam distribution, and then early in the morning they said, "Yes, today we're all going to share our karma together." I go, "Oh, thanks. But no thanks." So, I mean, how does that work? And then there's this another poll that went around, and it says that actually belief in reincarnation is less. So how does that work? Most of the people believe in karma, so that means that if there's not another life, then they work it all out in this one lifetime. And if there's some left over, well, you lose out, I guess, or you gain if it's bad karma. So you can see that they need a little bit of education. They need to see the bigger picture of karma and reincarnation and see how it does work together. It's a very important sciences. When I was at that festival this weekend distributing books, we have that display of the changing bodies. It's not a very big one, it sits on a table. But people were attracted, they came over just because of that. And, you know, people like to see where they are and ask questions like that. And I usually carry around just small books. I don't, especially with that crowd up there, I figured they couldn't really handle Gita right away. So, and I would ask them, which one do you like, you know? And 90% BBD, Beyond Birth and Death, they all were attracted to that because they have some interest and they're getting closer to understanding. And even the Christians that I talked to, and there were a lot of them there, I convinced them that they know what reincarnation is because you're eternal, right? Okay, so that, anyway. So they have to admit that they do believe in reincarnation somewhat. So, you know, but if you ask them questions like, okay, so who is watching you? Who's got the scoreboard? You know, who's doing the good and the bad? And who's the one that judge? Who's the judge anyway? Is there a whole team of judges? And then who executes all these results? How does that happen? And they don't have any answers to those. But we do. Yamaraj Maharaj, he knows all the laws inside and out, and he has some very enthusiastic executors waiting to jump in and follow his orders. So we can, you know, someone has to do that needful thing, and even if it's, you know, dragging you down wherever, that someone has to do it. And so we understand this in detail. So it's in the best interest that people do learn more and more about these, how to act and how not to act. And if there is a Supreme Court, how does it work? How do these laws work? Even in the mundane world, you know, we have a judicial system with you know, lawyers and judges and the jails and everything, because there has to be law and order, even on just in the mundane platform, otherwise it's complete chaos. And so on the higher level, there is this law and order. And it's for people that are responsible for their actions. The people who have intelligence, civilized life, they have to go to court and receive whatever is going to happen to them. There's exceptions. I mean, if you're a little crazy or if you're a child under a certain age, even we understand that karma doesn't click in until you can function on a discriminative level. And should I do this or shouldn't I do that? So here it's describing a lot about how we got into the situation, about this desire of wanting to do things, but mostly for ourselves, pretty much all for ourselves. And this is what mixes our desires, even when we get to the point of religion. You can see that still there's that hankering for liberation. I just want to get out of here. We all have that, yeah. And finally I found some way to get out. And even we're relief that now our karma is gone. But I was looking up the Muslim kind of reward system that they have. And there's, I guess, something where if you're good, you get to go to what they call paradise. And in paradise, if you're good, like if you're, even if you do like a suicide bombing or all kinds of weird, whatever you do, you get to go and enjoy 72 virgin maidens in paradise. And so... What? And so I looked at a little discussion from some priests about this, this so-called law or whatever it is. And some of them said, it's true, not true, and maybe it's 32, and maybe it's 72. But don't be disappointed. And then a woman comes on and goes, well, what about us ladies? What happens to us, And so a lady got on to answer the question, and she said, don't worry. She says that there's no envy there. So, if you got, there's 72 of you, don't be envious. That's not a problem. And then says that besides, paradise is where all your desires are fulfilled. So that means that those desires you actually carry with you. And then it says, and she says, don't worry, we can party in paradise. Look forward to it, So this is like, whoa, this is over the hill, But then even in the Hindu religion, there's, the demigod worship. I want to go to the moon planet. I want to go to this planet. I want a better situation. There was once a poll of who's the happiest people. It was the people in Bangladesh. And they asked some of the Bangladesh, why are you so happy? And they said, well, even though I'm a sudra or I'm a low class, I know that if I do my worship and everything, I'll be in a better situation. I'll go to a heavenly planet. So that desire is still within us. I went to Tirupati, and people are even worshiping Vishnu. They buy these little golden airplanes, and then they buy like legs and arms if you're missing one, and then you offer it to the deity in hopes that you get a trip to America, or you get you fix your legs or your stomach or something. So this is still there. But in Bhagavad Gita, it says that this worship, even of the demigods, is actually meant for Krishna. But it's a long time. It's a long detour. You could stuck in on the moon planet for tens of thousands of years. I'm sure it's cold there. Anyway, who wants to be there? Who wants to be in Indraloka for 20, 30, 50,000 years and not get to go to Vaikuntha, where it's no anxiety. It's wonderful, and you're with Krishna. So we have to be very careful that we don't have these little contaminations of wanting something in our actions, even in devotional service. But it is better than being a total materialist, do it the American way, be a self-made man, and work and get what you want. Whatever you want is there at your fingertips. It reminds me of that time when Srila Prabhupada was in at Dainippon in Japan, and talking to some of the employees there, and one of the employees, they were all giving the cards to Prabhupada, you know, oh, I'm so-and-so, I do this, I do that. And Prabhupada said, so what is your goal in life? You know, what you're trying to get to these people, you know? And he took his card and he put it on the top and said, this is my goal, to be the top on the top player on this company. So even demigod worship is better than that. At least I understand that there is a supreme person. So we understand a lot about karma. We understand that by the grace of this bhakti yoga, it's all erased. We start clean, initiation. The fan is unplugged, although there's still some rotation. But we see it as Krishna's mercy, definitely a minuscule of what we deserve, of all the sinful things that we did. But we understand so much more. And the pure devotee doesn't aspire for anything except for the pleasure of the spiritual master. There's a nice song that completely describes this. This is by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. O Lord, this is my humble submission at your lotus feet. I do not ask from you sensual pleasure, learning, wealth, or followers. I do not beg for residence on the celestial planets, nor do I wish liberation from this mundane existence. I do not pray for the attainment of any mystic powers, whatever birth I may obtain due to either the attributes or faults of my previous worldly activities. I pray that I may sing in the glories of your holy name, birth after birth. This is my only desire, O Lord, and I submit it at your lotus feet, that unmotivated devotion to you may constantly awaken in my heart. As much attachment as I now have for worldly affairs, I pray that a similar degree of attachment may develop for your lotus feet. I pray that my love for you may remain undisturbed, both in misfortune and in prosperity. May that love increase day after day by the power and influence of your holy name. Such a gift we've been given, this holy name, that we can pray to it for this wonderful selflessness that our previous acharyas have exemplified. It's something to really aspire for in this lifetime, just to get a little glimpse of having this attitude of really not wanting anything, that I'm doing all this service this lifetime just because of my spiritual master's desire. But even I've found that in ISKCON, some people have accused of like the distribution of, especially the, it's called food for life, that it is motivated. That some people disagree that we shouldn't be out there because we're actually just looking for fame, or we're looking for a new thing to put on our profile, or that we're trying to look good and try to be in the mode of goodness. But Prabhupada started this program to be transcendental. We're giving them prasadam. Everything that we're doing in the way of preaching is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. We're not wanting anything in return. I was just listening to a lecture last night, and Prabhupada was saying that we don't discriminate when we give out prasadam. We'll give to anybody and everybody. And of course, Prabhupada always encouraged us to have the chanting to go along with the distribution. And this is also very purifying. So it's like a double whammy, they call. You get such purification from distributing prasadam, distributing books. And the result is that we get nice persons like this person that's been coming. What's his name?
Arthur.
Uh-huh. So nice. He's so immersed in looking at the deities every day. It's wonderful. So we need to try to educate more people about this science of karma and how bhakti is the essence of how to not have any karma, and actually how to become totally attached to Krishna so we can go to that planet, not waste our time going to all these other planets. So we have our karma book with the picture of the you know, the guy, the butcher, and the switching heads, which is a pretty good seller also. People like that book. And then we had a radio series one time called, what was it called? The Christian Show or something like that. But they had a game show on there. It was called What's Your Karma? And your host is Don Yamaraj. And they go through and they have different people come in, and especially great personalities, and show them what your karma was. That was really a potent preaching show. And then we have also in Hungary, they have a system at their festivals. They set up a maze of cloth, and they have tables, and you can actually go there, and they have people sitting there and ask you questions. And at the very end, you get your karma, which could be quite shocking for some people, I imagine. And so that's very good preaching. It's the popular, like a hands-on type preaching program. And then I know I've been in where you have to do your judge service, your jury duty. And I had a capital punishment case one time, and they asked me what I thought about it, and I started explaining karma. And they were actually quite interested. They go, oh, so this would mean that less in the next lifetime. And so they were, it draws an interest, all of our preaching about it. And then there's the fifth canto. That's a great reminder, a real heads up for people that have had some sinful activities. These are some of the highlights of the fifth canto. Whenever you see that picture of Prabhupada smiling and looking at the book, he's looking at the pictures of doing all the chopping and the juicing and everything of the living entity. And then, so there's the Maha Rarava. That's where there's these beasts that tear at your flesh and torment you. That's if you've done any infliction on anybody else, if you've tormented or hurt anybody else. So they come back, little guys, and do it to you. And then there's the planet where it's called Kumbhipaka. And that's where the persons that have cooked animals alive. And it describes in the Bhagavatam that even the man-eaters, they can't handle that one. And that the person ends up getting cooked in oil again and again. And then there's, if you don't perform your religious principles nicely, you get whipped and you get thrown on a palm tree that has big sharp things, daggers sticking out on you. And then there's the juicy one. When the authorities punish innocent Brahmins, then you get put in a squeezer and juiced. And then there's the Andakupa. Andakupa is, this is the one I'm worried about. This is for one that inflicts pain or kills insignificant insects like ants, mosquitoes, wasps. Oh, I mean, our barn over there, you can't work in there unless you got a can of stuff. The wasps would take over. Anyway, you end up going to this Andakupa where you never sleep, because they come and they bite and they torment you. And I have experience of that after working out here dealing with ants every single day with hundreds of bites sometimes in one day. I don't have too much mercy on those guys. And so one time I took a break from here and I went to New Talavan, and I was given a nice guest house room. And I tried to go to sleep, ants all night long in my bed. I'm not kidding you, they bit me. So this was just a little taste of what might be coming. And then if you're very indiscriminate on sex, then you get thrown on a silk cotton tree. I've seen one of those in Miami at the Botanical Gardens. And it's a huge tree, and it's got stickers, big thorns, big ones like we have out here at the farm. And you get thrown on there and you get pulled down again and again, and you don't die. You have to do it again and again. That's the worst part. And then if you neglect subscribe duty, you go to the river of Baitarani, which is full of horrible things, bone and fat and blood and pus and urine. And then you get eaten by the worms there. And you don't leave your body, but you just get eaten again and again. And then there's, if you rob a Brahmin of their gold, guess what? You go to Sanamishra, and that's where your skin is torn, and you, a hot ball and thongs go in and rip you all apart. I had one person in Colombia when I was there steal an amulet off my neck on the street, which was had Prabhupada dust in it. I hate to see what's going to happen to him. Anyway, so these are to be taken lightly, as it says here at the end of the purport, that it's not, you know, fairy tale stuff. There are actually places like this. And some people who are intelligent will understand that and take it very seriously. There was a king in Cambodia who heard about this Veda culture and heard about the Bhagavatam, and he made a whole replica of the city of with Mount Meru in the middle and everything. I've been to Cambodia and I've seen this place. It's a world-known, renowned place for its carvings. And that king took so seriously this fifth canto that he had on a wall that's as long as this temple room, all those different reactions to your sinful lives carved in stone. And you can go there and still see it. So some people do take it seriously. Even Narada Muni, when he had to deal with Nirgari, he had a really nice tactic where he brought back all the, you know, all the animals and showed them what's going to happen to you. That was a good one. So really, these desires, they are ingrained within us very deeply, and the only way to deal with them is to smother them with devotional service, with spiritual activities, learning how to act for Krishna's pleasure. And we get some guidelines. In Nectar Instruction, we're told that do this and don't do that. How to act and how not to act. And one of the first things is don't over-endeavor for material things. All these karmis are working so hard for this so-called pleasure, and they're just going up and down on the Ferris wheel, on the samsara, wasting this human form of life, wasting this intelligence. So we don't want to go in that direction. And the do's, the most important one is to be enthusiastic, to do your service in a very enthusiastic way. But then you come to that story in Toronto when they're trying to buy the Avenue Road church, and they went to, they heard about it and went to see it, and Prabhupada saw it and saw how much it was, which was pitiful for, I mean, and the amount they wanted was like ridiculous, such a small amount these days. And then the devotees were thinking, how are we going to get the money, and how are we going to do this, and how are we going to do that? And yeah, Prabhupada said, yes, it's too much anxiety, too much over-endeavor. So they just said, forget it. And then later that evening, he called in the devotee and said, well, how about that temple room, and how about, how many people you think would come, and the location, and then he said, go for it, buy it. And the devotee was like, but you said not, it's too much anxiety, Prabhupada. He goes, we must have anxiety. In other words, this over-endeavor for spiritual things, that's a different thing. That's for the pleasure of Krishna. And it's very healthy to have a little anxiety of working very hard for something to please our spiritual master. I mean, if you go to see the Taj Mahal, like you saw the Taj Mahal, Pundarik Prabhu, what was it? Over-endeavor, you know, so much marble, so much this and that. For what? For the dead body of his wife, right? So it's a waste. This World Cup in Dubai, just recently, thousands of workers died because of the heat situation. For what? To kick a little little ball around for a few days or something like that. Over-endeavor. But then you look at Mayapur. Endeavor, like anything, money, endeavor. But for what? To preach to the world about Krishna consciousness. There's a letter, I wish I could find it. I remember I was in Houston when it arrived at the temple, and the letter said that, described how big the D should be. And this was a long time ago, this is 71. Or 72, and And it said that, there should be jewels embedded, and there should be around the altar, and the big Goswamis, and this and that. We're going, wow, a city. And it said we should have our own airport and our own shipyard so that they can come, the leaders of all the world will come. And he says, if the leaders all don't want to come to this project, then don't bother. And so that's what we took up. We grabbed the baton that Prabhupada gave us, that he received from Bhaktisiddhanta, and we're passing it on to the next generation to work and work with love and devotion for our spiritual master. And this desire will overcome all those other little piddly desires for our own sense gratification. And so this is becomes our life work. I'm sure Srila Prabhupada saw his endeavor was very difficult to come here and spread this Krishna consciousness, and sometimes he wanted to turn around and go home. But he didn't, because of his love and devotion to Srila Prabhupada, to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So our love will only come if we study and know his instructions and his desires. And this will propel us forward beyond all these desires to go to this planet, that planet, but to actually to go serve Srila Prabhupada again, wherever he might be. So maybe someone has some questions or comments. And if you don't know if it's an overdevor, I know that I have a big festival coming up, and I'm going, oh boy, here we go again, it's so much work. But, just have to see if it's going to help spread Krishna consciousness. And you can always ask your spiritual master if he's living, or try to understand what Prabhupada really wanted us to do. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
You said during your talk that children below a discriminative age don't get karma. I'm wondering, there's a story about Yamaraj coming to this world as Vidura, and Mundaka Muni, I believe his name was, when he was a child, he pierced an insect, and for that he was getting the karma of having to be lanced when he was older. So do children get karma, or don't they get karma?
Maybe someone can help, but I remember hearing like 5 and under or something. There's a certain age where I guess you don't have. Do you know anybody?
No? Hari Bhakti Vilas says 8, below 8 and above 80. They don't have to do a Ekadashi. Now, this is Sanatana Goswami says, because they don't commit any, they are not responsible for their.
Bhaktisiddhanta thought he was responsible for that mango incident. But I don't know.
Yeah, he was 2.5.
Oh, he went that old. No.
Bhaktisiddhanta. Yeah. But that's not common.
Yeah. Maybe Pundarik has the answer.
No, I don't have an answer. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada so many times used the example that if a child touches fire, he gets burned. And in the discussion between, I think, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev in Kurukshetra, they were explaining that if someone does something with a full result, full knowledge, he gets the full results. So I think I'm.
So it depends if your intelligence is together.
Yes. Was it my turn now?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's always an action and reaction. I mean, we keep thinking karma is like, oh, you got caught doing something bad, now you're going to get punished. You know, it's not quite like that. I think more fully. Everything's therapeutic. It's meant to help rectify the conditioned souls. You know, to take, you know, there's some responsibility and there's some, you know, it's all therapeutic from Krishna's perspective when thought of that way. Meanwhile, like it was just mentioned, even if you want to think of punishment, the punishment fits the deed. You know, if some little kid does something, it's not like you're going to put him in jail for 50 years. You know, they, even in ordinary mundane affairs, they treat kids differently.
And it doesn't get
well, it depends on the situation. I mean, but you know, it, again, depends on the situation.
I think that example was to show how karma is such a heavy thing.
Or either that, just don't touch fire.
But I've heard different ages, 5, 6, 7, 8, I don't know. But, the parents, they have to be careful because they're responsible for the children. It's a matter of responsibility. So we should try to encourage people to understand that in the human form of life, they're responsible. So better get their act together. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Glorious Prabhupada.
Right.